Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Millennial Dentist.
Hello. Welcome back. Hello.
Hello.
All right, awesome.
Hey, super pumped about tonight. First off, Payman, I got to say, it's good to be back at Studio My New Smile.
Studio My New Smile.
I'm glad to be here. Super excited to have Dr. Jeff Trembley back on the show.
I'm super excited to be here.
Look, I'm not going to lie. We've had a lot of requests that want to hear about what Dr. Jeff Trembley is doing with his practice, how the startup's working, and Payman the same way. That's a message I think that I get a lot is people wanting to, you know, they heard about what was happening with the startups. They heard about this. They want to kind of see. Here's what I would like to almost title this episode and see if y'all don't mind going this route with
me.
I'm kind of thinking that we title it something like the top things I've learned or I wish I had known before I started my practice.
Oh, fantastic. That's a good one.
Or something, you know, something along the lines of like.
It's almost like the complication lecture.
Yeah, it kind of is. Like, okay, like, gosh, I wish I had known this. Or I wish I'd done this differently. I wish I'd done this sooner. Or et cetera. So first off, before we kind of jump into the details of the weeds, why don't you both give me an overview of kind of how things are going and just the overall sense of where the practice is at. And then I'm going to, you know,
stop us.
Jump in and ask questions and try to dig in and kind of pull some of this out. Because I think that it would really, really benefit our listeners because we have so many people who have either bought a practice and they're trying to make it their own. Mm-hmm. Or they're considering taking the plunge and starting their own practice from scratch. And I think that it would be very, very helpful to listeners.
Okay.
So, Jeff, why don't you start off?
Yes, Jeff.
Okay.
Start off.
My name is Jeff Trembley. I opened a practice about a year and a half ago, November 2017. And this was a very sudden thing where I left an old practice.
And you were an associate.
Where I was an associate.
And you've been an associate for how many years?
I graduated in 2013 from UT Dental School.
Woo woo!
I then left that practice and took up shelter in Dr. Payray's place. He rented a room
for two months.
By the way, I think of that all the time and how gracious you were. Imagine somebody comes to you and says, Doc, I need one room in your place. Do you mind renting it out to me? Not only did he do that,
giving you patience.
Not only did he do that,
I didn't really do much.
But
I don't think
he was so just laid back. I mean, I would imagine, you know, because when I came over here, I didn't get all my cotton, all these things. I just used him.
Yeah.
Well, in the end, I ended up like, you know, I ended up getting him back for it and paying him, and you know, and it all worked out. But he really extended that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, after 2 months of being here,
it means a lot.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm glad you had that moment.
I forgot about it.
We never signed contracts. You know, I'd ask him what the bills were, and I just kind of
checked. Oh, that's cool, though.
Yeah,
that's cool.
No, the cool thing about it, but no, go ahead. So, yeah, that happened back in November or October, right?
September, October of 17. Right.
Okay.
So you kind of had, and like most people do, knowing a little history, you know, you kind of had a kind of a rock bottom moment or a moment of, you know what, it is time for me to do this on my own.
Yes.
You know, and I think a lot of dentists, whether it's getting ticked off with who they're working for, whether that's, you know, money issue or just wanting to build and cultivate what they want to cultivate in the culture. You know, at some point, every dentist has this moment where I'm ready to take the plunge. Yep. That was it for you. Then you start going.
I found a beautiful spot or a fantastic space. About 3,000 square feet. I got 5 ops.
Dude, it's beautiful there.
It's nice.
And it's spacious.
Yeah.
It's very spacious. I love it. It honestly feel like, because I'm one of those people, when I wanted to get somebody else's practice, it was so garbage. I'm sorry, but there was nothing good. And I kept looking. And then whenever this happened, I was like, where is it? And he's like, it's right here. And I'm like, how is it? And then I went in. I'm like, dude, this is like a lottery ticket.
It's a nice practice.
It's a beautiful practice.
Well, thank you guys. but to kind of keep this going, I got in there. I didn't have a single patient of record. It was a dentist who was using it as a satellite office. He would only come in on Fridays to see. I don't really know what his plan was. I think he, you know, life got busy for him. He just kind of held on to it I came in, purchased it. I didn't purchase a single patient.
So you're basically buying equipment and whatnot.
Equipment, and I'm renting the space. So, gotcha. You know, I don't own the building. But it ended up being a blessing in disguise, and here's why. The bank had a tough time lending me the money because—
Because they're like, you have no— How are you going to do your dentistry?
Right.
Exactly. Well, they also didn't know that, you know, I was receiving 100 patients a month at my practice that was 1 mile away.
Sure.
And how do you communicate that to
the
underwriters at a bank? So I had to go out and raise a bunch of money on my own.
You practically built that office, though.
Yeah. Don't want to talk about
that. Let's keep going.
So anyway.
So you kind of had to fight tooth and nail to get money and get the stuff right. and to make it happen.
In 24 hours, I found enough money privately to make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason I set that up is the listeners out there are going to all be in their own situation.
Sure, totally.
Have their own hills to climb. The hill that I had to climb was unique in that I had to really fight and claw for everything, even though I found a great space. But the fight really began once the door opened and the practice was mine. Everything from, you know, redesigning or how do I update this place without spending $100,000?
How do you start to do that, Jeff? Like, how do you, like, when you, because like my always question is when you, like, you've leased this space, you've bought this equipment, you show up one day, unlock the door, and it's yours, and it's like, heck yes, I did it. How do you prioritize, like, what's next? Like, attracting patients, redesigning stuff, hiring team members? How did you even start to wade through that?
That question right there could be a whole podcast.
Oh, I'm sure. But, like, I think, like, let's go into it a little bit.
Well, okay. So, when I got there, you know, the one thing that was actually okay were the ops. They're nice and big. The chairs are nice.
So, you got places to work with. You're ready to go there.
One of the first purchases I made was an electric hand piece. Two of them. I have two electric handpiece motors in two of the rooms, the two that I work out from mainly. I bought my hygienist nice ultrasonic and hand scaling. You know, just I equipped her.
Sure.
I got a few TVs to put in the rooms so you could look at photos and X-rays. And that's, you know, you can get decent TVs for not a whole lot of money.
No, they really can.
But also,
they're not Samsung.
You can, dude. I got a Samsung at Costco.
I know, it's $500. I know. I was at Costco. That's true.
Yeah. I love Costco.
No, it's great.
Okay, we're gonna go on tangents.
So my big thing has always been, if I'm gonna do dentistry, I'm not interested in churning and burning. I want to do quality. I want to provide something that patients weren't even really aware of. And if I could describe what my opinion of modern dentistry is, it would be. The most minimal intervention biologically to give you what you're looking for, or even getting as close as you can. So it's easy to slap 10 veneers on a patient.
Yeah.
But what about whitening? What about doing additive resin, maybe smoothing a surface here, a gingivectomy, and then you've got a beautiful smile. What does that look like? You know, so that's always been what attracted me to, you know, how I wanted to run an office. So that being said, I feel like I'm still in the midst of what's next.
So kind of go in between this for a lot of audience that don't know you and they want to, like, to kind of give a feedback or a flashback of what your personality is or what kind of dentist you are. So Jeff is always about, before he practiced or wanted to open this, his mind was always through a biological dentistry. Like somebody who, why do we need to cut? Why don't we change our materials to fit the patient instead of changing the patient to fit our materials? Kind of like his mindset. So when he started or had that vision of building that practice that he's doing right now, that whole vision, talk about having that vision or the passion, he's very, very passionate about doing that. So whenever he was doing this whole website, the build out, everything goes again. He always talks about he had TV because it's important for him. He bought electric handpiece because his preps are so important. So this is him.
No.
Whatever you are, because a lot of people are going to be wanting to do, for example, surgery stuff. They want to do sleep stuff. It doesn't.
It's just building the practice that they want to.
Correct.
Have,
like have
dream.
That passion, and that's good. How did you? So whenever you have that, the vision that you, because it's a very unique. A lot of people love cosmetic dentists. I feel like it's like flashy.
It's a buzzword.
It's cool.
It's
a buzzword.
Sure, yeah.
It's a lot of social media. Before you even did the office. Tell people that you started branding yourself
right. As
that doc, because that's the thing, right? He took advantage of the social media even before he opened his office, because that's a great thing. I feel like that helped you.
Right. Well, what the best move I ever made, I stand by it today, was contacting Dr. Eduardo Diegar with the pictures.
Eduardo, yes.
I found him back in 2015. Mm-hmm. Got
you even brought him to Nashville.
Brought him to Nashville. Yeah.
I will forever regret that one. Not being with that one.
Hey, we can get him again.
I know.
Hey, is that going to be at DIA?
It will never be that one again. Like that one was so. That you can't reproduce those kind of moments.
Andy up with Dr. Appa took that course.
Yeah, Andy.
You know,
that was such an early, like that was early.
Yeah.
But no, so he came in here, so he he was kind of like your mentor, right?
Yeah, well, I would consider him a best friend, type of older brother person.
He's a great guy. I love him.
He's flown out to San Francisco on a whim just to meet me out there. But the reason that's important is I realized that the photography was so important for what I was doing because I was seeing some other work for some guys who were cosmetic dentists in town. And up until very recently, up until the last 2-3 years, how did you get that distinction? You got that distinction by buying magazine ads and billboards.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Or you worked long enough where you became known by the community of their dentists.
But even still, it was still largely perception because
it was lack of work. It wasn't like
there was no show.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It was all perception based.
That's right. So what I did was I decided, you know, I love the AACD, but the most boring thing is their
AACD
photos. Yeah. And I understand why they have those restrictions. But so what I did with my Instagram, which is JF Trembley, by the way.
Yes, we need to shout out JF Trembley.
And Smile on Nashville is my office. But what was, you know, and this is all kind of rolled up into how my office got going, was I realized early in getting my camera that taking a retracted view and photographing it, putting it on the screen, and I could look at it. I just sit back in my chair and look at it. And things would start revealing themselves to me. There, my favorite case that I've done, I ended up calling the ceramist after he was already making the veneers and saying, we've got a canted midline. I'm looking at this photo. You know, we got to make this adjustment. He made the adjustment. It looked great. So the photos, I got those going to show, instead of taking out magazine ads, because I don't have any money to do that,
yeah,
I decided I would just share. I would be an open source. Like, this is what I'm doing. If you see something that I'm doing that maybe applies to you as a consumer, come see me. I had no idea how it would work. And right now, without a doubt, my greatest source of
referrals,
revenue, it's through Instagram.
Wow. It's crazy.
And
I would argue it's even more just through sharing. It's direct-to-consumer marketing through sharing your stuff.
Right.
Which happens to be one platform, you know, it'd be Instagram. It could be Facebook, you know, whatever it is, but it's that direct-to-consumer
marketing. And I make sure I don't do it in a clinical way. I want it to be artistic. I always tell people I'm the artist who slipped in dental school.
Sure.
You know, because I am. I'm not some brainiac. So I continue, just kind of stay true to what my strengths were. I have a whole photo studio. I had the choice of building out an extra op or putting a photo studio in.
Yep.
And I did the photo.
So let me jump in now. Cause I want to kind of dive into some of this in detail.
Okay.
what's crazy to me is, and I look back and even in our early conversations last year when you were starting this, is like, that's a hard uphill battle to stay truer to yourself and when money's not coming in.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to fight to make it, you know, as far as I know, you really didn't go into the insurance route. You stayed to some, you know, fee for service. Which, talk about trying to start a practice in this day and age in Nashville where there's dentists on every corner.
That is a good point.
You know, how did you, what was it like early on and for those people who are considering trying to follow their dreams when it's, you know, going in network with every insurance seems like the right thing to do to make the bills. How did you stay true to that when, because I imagine there were weeks where you're like, crap, there's no money for me to take out.
Right. Well, dentistry's hard. Dentistry's hard. Starting a new business is hard, I imagine, on any platform. So by no means am I sitting here trying to paint this beautiful rosy picture. The struggle's been amazing. In fact, this one thing that I've learned now, where I am today, is that the importance of data. And I didn't, when I opened the practice, my mindset was, this is such a new thing that even, you know, I'm not going to toil over numbers because that's not a real high priority.
You think if you deliver a high quality product and people see it, it'll all work out.
Right. Well, it's just not time yet to toil over these numbers when I couldn't have been more incorrect about that.
So talk, go into detail. Give me some specifics of things that like me, like, gosh, I wish I had seen that area.
Great. So as you know, I'm not in network, which means, golly, I could connect all this, but that means the conversation with the patient right away on the phone is very important.
Very
important. And people are uncomfortable with this fact that they've got this great insurance, or everybody thinks they've got insurance, so that means I get free stuff.
That's us.
So
insurance.
Realizing that, you know, the conversions was important, because I initially started out in hygiene by accepting $35. When you come in, you pay us $35. We receive the insurance check. If it's short what our fee is, we keep the $35. If they pay in full, which a lot of them did, we'd kick the $35 back and then stop asking for it. That was the plan. It got so convoluted, confusing, that January 2019, I said, all right, we're done with that. We're going all in. We're going straight up fee for service. If you have the best insurance in the world, great. You pay us and expect to get that back.
Wow. So is that going back to them or going back to you?
It goes back to them.
Gotcha.
Which means—
Are you filing it for them or are they filing it?
Oh, we file it.
Nice.
But you know, what that means is I kind of doubled down on the philosophy and not on the practicality, the business move, because patients have left. A handful of patients will call and really almost be offended at that because they haven't heard of it before.
I could see that, yeah.
But then about 70%, once we process and explain it to them on the phone, and when I say explain it, it means any other way is kind of a gamble. It's sort of gambling on our behalf. My office is gambling, right?
Sure.
Whether we're going to get paid or not. So what I did is I lowered my fees to something that I thought was good for the area, and knowing that 90% of my patients are going to get their whole hygiene check back every time.
Yeah.
And then explaining to them why we do that is important without, you know, so that whole process was really important.
How did you learn how to do that? How did you learn? Did you train the person on the phone? Did you bring in anybody? How did you?
You also had a. Did you go also through a consultant because you wanted to have some coaches?
I do have a consultant from. She's great. Her name's Dania Montoya. She worked for Jameson, and what Dania really helped me with was looking through our system to find, you know, combing through the numbers to find certain things that are happening that I wasn't aware of. And when I say I wasn't aware of, I had never run a dental practice. There's so many things. I found out from 2018 that about 43% of my hygiene patients had a second appointment, which means
that's not
over
good, right?
Half the time they were leaving and nobody was scheduling them.
What is your percentage, Soli?
Because I never specifically sat down my hygienist and said, You don't let anybody out the door without an appointment.
I love that you take ownership on that.
It's totally me.
Because I agree.
Totally me. And you know what? I take ownership on everything. I'll be the first person to call myself an idiot.
Hey.
Well, it's not that you're an idiot. It's just that at some point, look, I say this all the time. We only have so much bandwidth. You know, you can only so much focus on so much at a certain time. And the priority was certain things. And so, you reset and look back in hindsight and you're like, gosh, here's a great area for us to prove. Let's talk about making this a priority. And now I'm sure what you'll see is that number will start to skyrocket because it becomes a priority.
Here's what I'm trying to get to about that, about pulling numbers. So I think, there are things that are off the record book or off the balance sheet. And then there are things that are on the balance sheet. If you're planning to run a dental practice, or if you're looking to getting into a new startup or purchasing an old one, one thing you've got to do is understand what reports to pull, when to pull them, not just pull them, but spend some time looking at them, thinking about them. What are they telling me? And I don't have it all figured out, but I have a group of reports that should be pulled weekly and monthly, and then adjustments be made to that, because everything else is less concrete, you know?
Yeah. Give me some other reports or statistics that you've seen that have been impactful or that you're glad you're tracking now.
Well, the hygiene reschedule rate's one.
That's a big one, because that's essentially the hole at the bottom of the bucket.
Yeah.
If that's not being, you could be spending all this money or whatever it is to get new patients in the door, and if they go straight out the bucket as soon as they come in,
absolutely,
you're no good. So you got to stop the leaky bucket.
You've got to create the behavior in the office, almost like impose it on the patients, not in a forcible way, but in a way that, they're leaving with an appointment.
It's an expectation that, hey, I come here and then I get my next appointment.
Yeah. Some other reports, man, like knowing, not only looking at reports, but seeing how they change. So new patients, for the first bit, we weren't even really combing through the paperwork and making sure they filled out who they were referred from. So then the next thing, this is important. So we put
how are they getting here?
Right. So I made it so that the iPad, you have to put that in to go to the next question. Gotcha. I've got a few of them where you can't leave it blank. Well, then what? So you look at these things and you say, okay, last month I had, 40 to 60 new patients. Where are they coming from? And then realizing what we were talking about before we started here is that truly the best source for new patients is other patients.
Internal referral.
How does that change your behavior? Okay, so I look at this, I say my best patients, the things that are going the best for me here are coming from other patients and then maybe my Instagram. That means, how does that change my behavior? I realize instead of running around feeling like I'm in a rat race trying to get back to this or that, I slow down. I thank patients for coming in. I tell them that, it really helps me if they want to post on their Instagram. I'll leave and go up front with them. We'll have fun.
Yeah.
And realizing that I need to give the gratitude. I need to show them that they're important to me. And although you don't feel that right away, you can see it in these reports over time.
For sure. We've been going through Paul Homily, his Making It Easy for Patients to Say Yes.
Yeah.
His whole kind of curriculum. And one thing that he talks about is early on last week or something is if you were a practice if your practice were a restaurant, what would you serve? And if you think about it, about it like from a restaurant standpoint, even a hotel standpoint, but you think about somewhere like the Ritz-Carlton or like a Fleming's, whatever, the experience that you get from the person that, greets you to when you leave is such a different experience than you get at, maybe step down O'Charlie's or Cheddar's or something like that, to a BurgerFi or a Chipotle to a McDonald's.
What kind of chicken are you getting?
Exactly.
Everywhere.
If you think about it, you can get – so for someone who wants to deliver the kind of dentistry you want to deliver and run the practice,
it's hard
the way,
to do
it's so critical
yeah. Yeah.
that your practice, not only, because what he talks about essentially is, and I love this, I think this is gold right here. He said, the level of your dentistry has to equal the level of your basically experience and the care that you give to patients. Mm-hmm. Because the problem is that to a patient, the quality of the dentistry is less important to some degree. Yeah. They, because it's hard for them, they don't get it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they see an aesthetic outcome. They don't know how much harder it is to do conservative restorations or to make things blend without just veneering 8 teeth. Right. So to them, it's the experience. And so we have to make sure that our experience equals the quality of our dentistry.
Experience.
Yeah. You know what else is interesting?
So
is
important.
People, sometimes we have we don't do a good job of saying exactly what it is we want people to know.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's meaning communication.
Well, yeah. But communication has all types of forms.
No, but this one, like dental communication, like whenever dentists, for example, that goes back to our talking about how much we had hard time of a lot of dental students or dental, like in our classmates, yeah. like in UT, for example, or any dental students right now, like, if you look back and see that 80, 90 people in your class, how many of them were really, truly, would you as a patient go to them? And then the same patient or the same dental student is going to be a dentist later on. So I think the communication comes be a big, big factor. And a lot of dentists expect to pay a lot of money to their assistants to do that for them where they can do it themselves or they do a bit like that's, I think, to
I'm,
me, honestly.
I'm going
to
be real direct in this.
Tell me. Be very, very direct.
Real direct.
Create a lot of drama right now.
So, the one thing.
We need a podcast feud, by the way. We need to come up with a podcast feud.
Podcast feud.
We got to find someone that we're pissed off
at. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Well, what I mean is, and I may not pull the best example from this, but what I mean is if you don't say exactly what it is you mean in your range, this is my world, my office. Obviously I want to act gracious to everybody in there, but this is my turf, this is it.
Dude, it's your name on the building or it's your loan. It's your whatever.
Everything.
Yes.
That includes, you got to say exactly what you mean to staff, to patients.
Expectations.
For example, I had a friend who canceled 3 appointments consecutively.
Uh-oh.
Right? So instead of my staff putting him through the protocol, I texted him. I was like, look, no more missed appointments. This really, compromises me. I have staff here waiting on you. I can't make this up. I can't fill your spot. Don't do this again. Saw him today. He came in. He apologized.
You had
a
3
few times.
Of them, though?
He did it 2 or 3
times.
No,
it's good, but it would be so easily to.
Because he's not thinking about it.
Right.
Also, but what I also mean is with patience, you've got to be, I've learned that it helps to be very direct, mm-hmm. even with.
Elderly.
Well, whether it's treatment plan, why do I want to do it this way? Well, we could do it that way, but
I think
just
even the finances,
direct,
for example,
finances,
just
everything.
Talk about my own personal experience. When I built the office, because we were talking about the same thing pretty much, I had about $175,000, $180,000 we talked about before that I didn't collect from the work that I had done. These hybrid patients, it's like I did immediate load, I did implants, everything is there, and this patient is not coming back. So then I'm like, what did we tell them? Like, what were they expecting? Like, what you just said, as far as be direct, that's what they didn't get from us, or I feel like they didn't get. But I mean, honestly, what you have to do, what we are doing right now in order to fix that whole financial problem is writing everything down as a, like, because sometimes also patients like to have that written thing, like, because everything is computerized, everything, right? But then when Gladys gets on the, like, when she's talking to them in the treatment consult room where they're writing everything, like, hey, we agreed to this $30,000, $20,000, $10,000, even $5,000, you have to pay by this date, initial this, initial that, scan this and give it to them because that's your only copy. And then if you're not direct with them, because this is how I was. Oh, you can't pay today? Oh, it's okay, next time for your post-op. And then the post-op became 2 years later.
Yeah.
So that's why direct talking about, because I'm, I mean, I struggle with the whole $170,000. Think about how much write-off I had to do.
Well, it's hard to be direct until the direct message to you is, you just lost $200,000 not being direct.
Yeah, yeah. That you learn very quickly. So, so what would, as we kind of, Jeff, I want to bounce over to Payman here in a second and kind of get his experiences from this. What, if you had to kind of give me the one, what's been the one hardest thing that you didn't necessarily expect before you went into this whole journey, what would you say that's been?
You asking me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The hardest thing, the rate of, well, if I can get real narrow on it, I'm pretty savvy with computers, Photoshop, Lightroom. I can get through programs. I've had the toughest time with my website, with my marketing. It's almost like the one thing that I run, which is my Instagram, is the only thing keeping us alive. And the reality that nobody is ever going to give you their best effort right away unless you extract it out of them, unless you don't, you know how, like for example, I had a meeting with a girl that I'm going to do some radio ads for. It wasn't really clear how many actual radio spots I was going to have. I was like, I'm not signing this till you write how many total ads there are. She's like, well, you can look and count it up. I mean, no, like go back, redo this. Cause I want to know how many single
stuff I'm getting.
Yeah. Because you'll learn if you don't do that, you'll find out you had 28 instead of 55, like you thought. And then it's too late, you know? So I'm learning that one of the hardest things about opening the practice was having to be on top of so many things.
Yeah.
And then also the realization that if you let something go or don't give it the attention, it's not going to get done.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah, I got burned out. Now, yours was in websites, which is, thank God, I didn't have to worry about that. But there's a lot of different things that I got burned.
What was the hardest thing for you, Payman?
For me, was like I've always said it, because a couple of weeks ago I had another podcast with the students of North Carolina. I was talking about that, and this was my biggest thing was whenever I built. Is it rainy?
Yeah.
My biggest thing was when I built the office, I had no idea how much the front office, because I was so worked up in the clinical world. That I didn't know how much front office meant. So going through opening the office.
And there were days, I remember, where you didn't have anybody answer the phone.
Yeah.
Like you're back there working. Yeah. And I roll in and there'd be no one with the phone.
So I didn't know how important the front was. And then not just the front person, because this is what I thought. And let me tell people, because I'm going to tell you the problem and then tell you the solution.
Sure, sure.
So the problem was, I thought my money, whatever I save up, I'm going to hire the best front office team in the world. So I'm going to have like Real Madrid, Barcelona in the front.
Yep, I get it.
And then I'm going to be like Real Madrid and Barcelona in the back because I got this, right? The clinical is mine. Mm-hmm. And then just figure out this. How much do you want? Or how much? So now let me find this best front office people. And trust me, it's not that person. It's then I realize it's not them, it's me. Is me, I expected them to read my mind. I expected them to know everything. And these people were getting paid pretty good, 60, 70, even close to sometimes even higher. But me being very, I don't know if lazy is the word, but like not wanting to go through the struggles of learning the front and wanting to have to pay for it. You know, like, hey, you do it. Not learning it, that's where it caught me. That's where the $180,000 came from. So where I saw that it's missing and a lot of that.
I got a dime, a pearl for pearls.
Let's hear it.
So yes.
Give me the pearl.
Recently, you know, my office is small. I got a front desk, a hygienist, and an assistant. So obviously, duties get blended between people.
Correct.
It's not a sharp separation. So what I did, because I love lists. I've got clipboards up front. Everybody's got their name on it, just blank lines. And so if somebody needs me to send a photo to a specialist, they don't come to me. They go write it on the clipboard. Because if it's not on the clipboard, it doesn't happen.
I love that.
When it finishes, I cross it off. So right now,
list.
I have a whiteboard in my office that's like that. It's a giant whiteboard for that reason.
Whiteboards are great. However, there's psychology behind it because
Because the crossing off thing and seeing that?
Oh, you see the progress, you know? And then like if somebody's got 80 things on their list and one person has it crossed off, you know what I say? Go grab her clipboard and see what you can do. I'm serious. It's great. It is the best thing I've done.
That's good.
It's a list.
Anyway, well, part of it's accountability thing to some degree, which is nice. So Pam, my question then is, at what point did that become a priority for you, or when did you really like notice it?
When I realized the money's when not the money coming in and there's like my bank account is getting negative and then the bank is calling like I'm getting overdrawn, and that's when I was like, wait, this is getting like serious.
Yeah, it's legit.
So then I was like, okay, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And that's when I started learning about the front desk, which I'm still learning. I mean, don't get me wrong, but one of the things I thought it would be cool, or not cool, but one of the things I felt like we need to have done or should have had done is the vision for my team members. Like, okay, so when I hired...
Yeah, tell us about that.
So I hired... When I first opened the office, I felt like a lot of these things... Okay, so...
It was your vision when you hired the office.
It was my vision. It was like, you guys talk about, oh, it's your name on it and this and that. And that's how I felt. But then... It is not the same thing to these people that work there. So how do you make that transition? How do you make them to be a part of that? How do you make that how do you make them feel like they are just like you? Like,
so that's kind of what I'm hearing from you is there's almost two visions, right? Like there's some degree there's your vision.
Correct.
But really what ultimately makes what moves the practice is this cumulative team vision.
Team vision. So that team vision has been the hardest thing that now that I have a good, gosh, it's been 2.5 years now that I have people like Vivi that's videoing us right now. But then we have like really, I think another thing that is really good people that are like me. Like-minded people. So for example, talk about there's so many people that want to work and there are so many assistants out there, but they might not be the right person for you.
Sure.
Because your vision, whatever it might be, might not be the same. Like, okay, so here's my thing. I feel like, you know how back in the day they say, oh, leave whatever is at home, don't bring anything to the office.
Yeah.
Like, forget that. No matter what you do in the home, it matters. Yeah. So if I, right now when I interview people, I just don't care about you. Like, tell me who is your, like, honestly, it's all about your personal life. Because if you cannot handle your personal life, you think you're going to handle this $30,000, $40,000 case or this office that has so much going on. So there's more to it. If you have a staff member that are struggling big time, like crazy on a lot of different things, bring them in, talk to them. And some of that stuff I felt like helped me when I had these consultants recently that I hired where we're going to have, we had them on the show a couple of times, Crabtree people that are kind of enlightening me in like, hey, you got to sit down and talk to them about this is what you want to do and the expectations. Be more direct. So like you, Jeff already said it, how you got to be more direct with people, like telling them this is what I want. Because a lot of times to you, my perfection might not be what they wanting to do.
And when you get the team to buy in, it's dangerous.
Right
now.
That's
when it really takes off.
That's when it is dangerous right now because they're pushing me more than because they're asking me, hey, do this and this. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like what I want. But before then, it was just me trying to cry out for help. Like, hey, somebody sees what I tried to do. And it was so hard. Don't get me wrong. It's still hard because I'm going through that whole transition. And I feel like, honestly, I was talking to another person, somebody, Akil Alexander in Ohio, Minneapolis yesterday because he's opening his office and he was talking about it. And I said, how important or how much mature I feel like I've got or adult, like literally thinking of building this office because he was asking me, is it worth it or should I just do this corporate? And I was like, man, it makes you a different person.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm so much more superior than what I was 2 years ago, honestly, in so many different aspects.
I agree.
That it allows me to become more better for my patients ultimately.
Well, somehow you figured out how not to sleep and just work all the time.
Right.
He's the boss when that comes to that.
You know, to touch exactly on what you're saying, I think, well, you know, I talked about reports and data.
Yes.
There's a story that's being told in your software. One of the first things you've got to do, whether you have open dental or you're using Weave, if you don't sit down mm-hmm. and learn all the intimate ways to run that, you won't. I mean, we've been operating with a lot of inefficiencies. I sat down, I watched some open dental tutorials. I found out so many things. Basically, there are ways to pull reports that paint a picture of your practice.
Dude, it's insane.
Do you recommend dental or some of those reporting dental intel that I'm paying or reports practiced by numbers?
I think at the end of the day, ultimately to me, what I would say is just track them. I don't care how you do them. Mm-hmm. I like dental intel or practice by numbers because I'm lazy. And it paints a very clear picture for me. And there's some other aspects of it I like beyond the reporting from a recall standpoint and finding patients. Ultimately, they all pull the numbers from your practice management software, meaning all the data is in your practice management software. So you can pull the reports from EagleSoft, Open Dental, Dentrix, you know,
whatever
it is.
Well, the good thing about that software is you could have somebody not, you know, like let's say you have a consultant halfway across the country, they don't have to get in your software to look.
Right.
And that's a big advantage.
That is nice.
Another thing is when you, you know, as we evolve as practice owners, I've learned that having the data organized is great, but it has to be combed through. So what I'm doing now with my team, this is very recent, like in the last 2 weeks, is pulling them together, such as account receivable. There shouldn't be a single account receivable in my office.
No.
It's all fee for service.
It's all fee for service. Exactly. So it should be, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but they're on there.
Right. So it's like, okay, what's going on? Why are these things? So it's exactly. For me, it's okay. I have my cumulative hygiene reappointment percentage, but like I need to know like, okay, are three of them really good and one of them suck? Okay. What's your verbiage that they're not doing? You know, or that they're doing or they're doing, you know, or what's your collection percentage or what's your, you know, 90 day AR, you know, what's your, you know, I mean, you know, all these things matter.
Well, you know what they do matter, but you know what I'm finding out, and at least it doesn't exist right now. It would be something that I would love to put together for the future generation. Let's talk about reappointment. Reappointment would be nice to review once a week. Because if you do it once a month, they may not remember that patient or what happened.
Sure.
Or not. So once a week, that needs to go down. There's an accountability and it's close enough
to that
appointment.
So we did that for a while. So we were doing that for, I was having them every week for a while. I was printing out every patient that didn't reappoint.
Yeah.
And I wanted a reason why they didn't reappoint.
And you found that it was a waste because they were giving you good reasons?
We had gotten to the point where yes.
Like you burned it into them.
Well, at some point when you're 90, now we're at like 92, 93%. Yeah. So like when you're 9 out of 10 patients, okay, you're not going to have 100%. Like there's going to be a college kid.
Right.
There's going to be someone moving. There's going to be stuff that happens.
Sure.
So I needed to see that.
Yeah.
Or it was stupid stuff, right? Like not attaching procedures.
Right.
So like if you just reappoint them, but don't attach the Profi code or whatever it is. Well, then but that's sloppy to me, right?
Well, it's not sloppy. You're sorting through a problem when you do that. That's what I've learned is so important to go through with the
sorting
staff
through the problem is where you
them.
Find out what's going on.
Yeah, because ultimately, what will happen with these numbers is it's crap in, crap out, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't put in good numbers,
in the right numbers,
you get shitty numbers.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was that regard.
Yeah.
But what I love about this episode, though, and what I love about both of what y'all have told me is nothing has to do with clinical dentistry.
That's so true. Nope. We didn't talk.
Think about it. If you think about it, not one thing y'all have mentioned has to do with, because I think so much of it is the fear of, okay, well, can I do this or can I handle it? It is, gosh, I mean, it's nothing was clinical.
Nothing.
Yes.
It's interesting. And so to me,
Steven, look at who.
Oh, to me,
you're not gonna let him in.
Get him.
If I
please,
you know, to the young doctor,
I want to get a video of him. Look at this guy.
To the young doctor who's trying to figure this out, or the older doctor, it comes down to so much of running a business.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and building a team around you to help you wade through a lot of that stuff.
Well, you know what's funny?
You gotta get him a cam.
You know, we've been talking as kind of the guys peeling off of these new practices. I would love to run you through all these because I feel like you're much more seasoned.
his
systemized
season.
Mature office. You're dealing with more people, more patients, more. You got another doctor, your dad.
It's similar. The difference, it would be fun. The big differences are it's the same stuff. It's just trying to, it's rewiring an existing practice.
Yeah.
And a lot of it. You know, because the perspective that would be nice to is the differences between having to rework, a practice that's already like you buy out a practice outright.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to redefine it versus starting from scratch. There was never no pre, there's no, it is what it is. There was no, we used to do it this way. You know,
right.
that becomes the difficult part is, well, we've done it this way for so long. So,
you know what? I would imagine one of the hard things that you've had to do would be auditing the systems. Like, I assume if you have somebody who's kind of had that front desk, they're running the front, they're responsible for these systems, they're seasoned, they're respected, they need to be audited too. I mean, you need to see what they're doing. And I imagine that would be a very difficult thing to come in and say, how do we make sure that this, because everybody's flawed, everybody's got their shortcomings. How do we make sure everybody's, how can I coach this person and find out where they need to be coached without offending them or seeming like,
it's tricky.
Tough. It's real tricky. I mean, I still deal with that with my staff. I don't want to seem like I'm coming down on them or being too hard, but I got to ask some direct questions.
To me though, it's easy for us.
Yeah.
Because what I say is it's, I lead by example. Who takes more CE than us? Who works harder on what we do more than us?
Payment.
Who stays late harder than us? No. But that's my point. Like at some point, Payment can sit there and say to anybody, because if his team doesn't respect how much effort he's putting in himself trying to get better, then he's got the wrong team.
Right.
You know. So at some point, I need my team. Like if they truly know and believe in that, I'm constantly trying to get myself better. Then they know when I come to them. That it's more out of this cultivating of we're all trying to get better, you know. The tide rises all ships. Even Michael Jordan had a coach. Yeah. You know, you could go on and on right. about. Look, it's not a negative. I'm getting mad at you. It's just I'm doing this to me. I'm the one that's got to get like I want to too. And when it comes from that standpoint, it's either the wrong person or I think they get on board. And a lot of we had eight team members. Before I got there, only three of them are still there.
Wow.
Sully said, you're out.
It was less that though, and more they realized that they weren't going to fit in the culture.
I can vouch for this because I see him every week and I've been going back and forth. And it is not really what he really did after he started working there is what I realized after I started working at the corporate where I came in and I saw what's going on and I was like, dude, there's no way for what I want to do it with these folks.
Exactly.
So what he was doing was exactly what I did. So I'm like, dude, there's no way you can work with these folks because their mental mindset is in the 80s.
And most dentists, to go back to your point, Jeff, is they won't.
And Stephen
agrees. They'll be held captive by existing systems or existing team members, even though their name's on the building. And I don't mean that in a cocky way.
I get it.
But at some point, I got to have the people there that want to support the vision and the thing that I want, because even though it's a team vision, I want us all to be on the same page.
There's a lot of psychology involved. And if you thank goodness for my dad, he gut checks me a lot, asks me a lot of hard questions.
Dude, me too.
And
me too.
And you know, a lot of it has to do with staff.
Patience. That's what I've learned.
Patience.
I tell you where I was 3 years or 4 years ago, whatever, when I came in and where I am now, it's so much of just like, one, cooling off before I really assess something.
Yeah.
Not trying to react in the moment.
Yeah. Don't be reactive. Be proactive.
You know, and trying to like, okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's gather the information. Let's think about it.
Yeah.
Then let's have a conversation.
Sure.
But it's interesting. It's so much more about managing people, running a business,
yep.
you know, those are the things, I think the hard, they're the hard aspects of what we do a lot of times.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. You're right, Sully. And for people who feel lost and almost like they're overwhelmed, start with that damn checklist. Create, tell everybody, and you could even go as far as saying, if you initiate something, write it down.
I love it. I love the checklist.
So I could see.
Did you get that from Checklist Manifesto from Atul Gawande?
I have the book. I haven't read it yet.
I read the first few pages. It's pretty good, but then
the first few pages.
It's too medical.
Because everybody said it's good. Yeah, it's too long.
All right, I want to wrap it up with this one question.
Yes.
What is something you're trying? You know, having come from where you've been, having both now. I think you're both on the incredible path to success with these practices. What is one big goal that you're wanting to achieve in 2019 with your practice?
I go first and then you go.
Yeah, you go.
I want to achieve my lifestyle is going to change here soon. I'm going to be owning a lab and Fantastic. Doing my lab work in the house.
That's big. That's huge.
And that is my biggest thing I've been looking forward. I just closed on a house yesterday that I'm not as excited as I am about building that lab here. So that's ultimately the goal. Is honestly not the lab. It's not the money. It's not all that. It's, to me, I feel like I became a dentist because I wanted to control my work and quality. And I just cannot do that with talking on the phone and communicating and Photoshop and work. Like, let's just build it here and do it all together. So that's my biggest goal biggest dream this year.
That's awesome.
Maybe hopefully next year.
My biggest thing is to find a lab within a mile of me. I'm just kidding. Payment.
Perfect.
Without a doubt. See, mine is, it's very similar to yours, Payment, but in a different stroke. My plan is, because I spend hours.
I know, and you do too.
Well, I spend hours waxing things.
Yeah,
up.
And he does. You know, he's got his own waxing in his office.
I know,
isn't that crazy? Last time I saw waxing instruments was in D1.
Well,
and I paid somebody. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't pay somebody.
And here's why: give me a smile, and I can make it better additive. And if I can't, send them to ortho, and then I can. So
you gotta be an orthodontist.
So what I want to do is in 2019, get it out of the analog and be
digital.
Everybody I talk to says, you don't want to be doing your own digital mock-ups. No way. Outsource that to the lab. Even Payment says that.
Yeah.
Just like they told me, you don't want to spend too much time on temps or whatever. You want to make them crappy so they come back. I've done the opposite. I'll do smile design temps for people.
Dude, his temps are better than my finals every day.
I refer impatience from my chair. I'm like,
his temps. I'm like, dude, you are making.
You want an 8 out of 10? Come to me.
Well, no. Listen. So this is what I really want to do. I want to become an expert in exocad because I see that.
That'll be cool.
That
exocad academy.
As a dentist, the one thing that's really, really important is the smile design. So I would rather outsource a lot of the other stuff I'm doing now and just people come in, I look at them, scan them, take a few photos, spend 40 minutes designing the smile. Now, I don't have the printer yet, but all this stuff will flow
out of the design. Print these temps and do that off the thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, and there are guys doing that.
When you say 40 minutes, are you going to design? Because don't you think this is going to be a lot easier in the next few months to where you can actually take 6 different teeth and put them in?
Sure.
But the thing is, again, going back with Jeff is extremely, extremely selective into terms of like what is your width to length ratio, what is the cusp it's going to look like, how much light is going to come in if the lateral is curved. And a lot of these things that me and Soli are like, it looks the same for Jeff is 5 trines.
Yeah.
So that's why you're doing
well. I don't know.
Because a lot of people are going to be like, well, how are you going to do 40 minutes of wax design? Because you're not getting paid for that. But you're going to charge patients for that, are you?
Well, it'll all work out in his model.
Well, what's going to happen very soon is you're going to pick a series of teeth.
Yeah.
You're going to hit enter. It's going to sync it where it thinks it should be. And then you make the smile corrections. Yeah.
And then you send them to my buddy over here. And he does all on 4.
Dr. Parks.
A week later.
Dr. P.
DP. Yeah, yo.
Good to see you.
You met him. You met
Sully.
Each other.
Dude, you're the man.
Instagram friends. Yeah, we've never met in person. I think it's Instagram friends. Classic. Go get it.
Oh, greatness.
For those of you who don't know this, Sully Sullivan was my grand sib in dental school.
Oh, yeah. Great time.
Grand. That's so funny. Grand sib.
I look up to this guy so much, man.
That's so cool, man. I'm proud of him, too, man. He's killing it. Tony Robbins, dentistry right here.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
All right, everybody. Thank you all so much for joining us. I've really enjoyed this episode. Hope you did too. Please reach out to us at JF Trimbley, at Dr. Payray, at Melodes on Instagram.
Yes. And please write us a good review or drink a couple of wine or something.
No, payment is totally spot on. We're trying to build. We've been bad about asking our patients or, in this case, our fellow colleagues for reviews. And so we were asking you, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review.
Or
if you want to leave us a 2-star,
give us just send me a text.
Wait. How about this? How many listeners do you have on any one episode?
A couple thousand.
Okay. Everybody go on to Sullivan Dental Partners in Brentwood, Tennessee.
Please.
Leave a Google 5-star review.
I'll do it to you.
Oh, that'll be good.
Boom. Next one. Smile on Nashville.
Yes.
In my new smile.
Yes.
I hope to see 2,000 new 5-star reviews
in the
morning.
There's no reason you shouldn't.
Why not?
That's good, man. Thank you so much, guys. It's been awesome.
All right.
Work smarter, not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.